number 458. My name is John Morgan, and Cold Coffee is with me in an ice cold Las Vegas, bro. I mean, cold.
I thought you just
meant
in the house too, because I could have turned the heat up a little bit too. When I thought about it, I was like, even for me, I was like, it feels a little chilly in here.
It's clear my man is saving on the heating bill this month. You know what I'm saying? New year, new heating bill. Let's keep the cost down. Well, I did notice that.
Envy Energy be screwing us out here. The gas has gotten more expensive, but Envy Energy has gotten crazy. Dude, did you see that they approved another rate hike?
No. Didn't they just do
another
one last
effing
year?
Rate hike? And it's so shitty because they want to – for the infrastructure. I'm like, bro, what did we just pay for? It's so crazy because you use the same amount of gas now from like 2 years ago and you're paying twice as much. It's just
That's
absolutely
crazy.
Ridiculous. So yeah, no, I'm it's not so that no, I didn't
I wasn't,
try to
I wasn't
turn
gonna
the
crack on you for the thermostat. I know if I'm coming
I felt like it. So if I feel it, I was like, maybe it's a little cold in here. But John's still wearing the sweatshirt that he came
with. I have a hoodie on, and I've been here for a few minutes and I have adjusted, but when I first walked in, I was like, whoa. My man is hanging some meat in here, practicing some butcher skills or something. He just bought a whole cow and he needs to split it up, and so he's got to ice down the whole apartment. But no, dude, it got cold, man.
Yeah.
It got cold. In fact, I saw as I was driving on the way over here that you were retweeting some images
from
Mount
Charleston.
Yeah. For people that don't know, obviously when you think of Las Vegas, you think of the desert, and of course it does get very hot during the summertime. There's no question about that. But there's an area just like, and we've talked about it before, but like 45 minutes from the Strip, maybe a little bit more if you hit some traffic, but 45 minutes, Mount Charleston, man, there's a ski resort up there. Again, it's not Rocky Mountain-esque ski resort, but you can ski a little bit.
Yep.
But it's always a little bit, it's 30 degrees on average cooler up there, just an hour from the Strip. So it's a great kind of locals getaway during the summertime to get away from the 110s. Yep. But we do get some snow here on the desert floor here, the valley floor, but not often. But it's coming down up there, like to the point where like you got to have chains on your tires.
Yeah. There's
and
a point
like
in the year,
that.
Yeah, where they tell you like don't go up there because you know you got like the city folk and the Vegas people. They're like, oh, I want to go up to the top of Mount Charleston. And they get to a point where their car gets screwed, and then they're just like, so Mount Charleston a lot of times is like, stop coming
don't
up,
come
here.
Up here.
If you don't have chains
it's like
on your
a two-lane
tires,
road.
If you don't have whatever, they're like, just turn around or we're gonna stop you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just for their own good because they're gonna be spending a lot of time pulling you out of the snow or whatever. But yeah, it's legit going up there. And it's funny because I saw first thing when I woke up this morning, maybe it was yesterday, it was really, really gray. And you could tell that I had heard that there was like a storm front coming through or whatever, that you're going to get stuff. And that's always kind of neat, you know, because I enjoy being able to look off in the distance and see the snow on the mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of the most unique, cool views because you got the whole backdrop of Vegas and all the lights, and you can see all that other kind of crap, and you can see all the city, and it's so huge. But then you look off to the side, and you kind of forget that we're surrounded by all these mountains. And then when you see the snow on top, it's just beautiful.
It is pretty.
You know, it's really, really beautiful.
And for me and you, like, you grew up in Ohio, you grew up in the flat plains.
Very,
I grew up
flat.
In Texas, flat plains, whatever. So it is kind of cool to just look up. Like you said, one day you look up, and it's just a bunch of clouds, and the clouds kind of eventually roll off and burn over, and then boom, snow.
I mean, we had some hills that you could drive around, and like, but hills is different than legit mountains and stuff. You know, like it's beautiful here. But yeah, this is a really, really cool time. And it's kind of crazy because like I was just thinking about it last week. I felt like we're in January. Like, where's winter been? Like, it's been – we had, like, 60 degrees
it showed
just,
up
like, a few
week.
Days ago.
It showed up, like, today, like, this morning. My kid was going back to school today, and one of his gifts I got him was a little a motorized bike or whatever.
Oh, nice.
Like, you know, so to help pedal or whatever and make it give you a little – so you can go faster and stuff, you know. And he wanted to ride his new bike, and we were all ready to go, but, man, it started, like – drizzling rain and the wind was blowing. It got nasty, so we had to put the kibosh on that.
Well, you know, it was a good idea.
We tried. He's still sick, by the way. I'm almost
back
to 100%. I'm better.
Yeah.
I'm almost back to 100%, but I can still hear it a little bit in myself, and sometimes I'll cough a little bit.
Yeah.
But he's bad, man. In fact, I'm sure it's nothing, but my wife is actually with him at the doctor right now just to make sure.
Yeah.
It's probably nothing, you know what I mean? But it's been lingering for him for a couple weeks, and he's actually like 2 weeks in, and the cough is worse than it's been the whole time. So just to be safe, go get him checked out and make sure there's nothing we can do. But, dude, this illness is just like getting everybody, man.
Yeah.
It's been going around. So.
Knock on wood.
You haven't gotten it yet?
No.
Oh, man.
No, I feel like I got felt a little something, maybe like one of the last fight weeks or something, felt like I had like a bit of a headache or felt something. But no, knock on wood, I've been pretty good. You know, when you live as clean as I do. Clean living. I'm in the gym all the time.
Athlete like yourself in there. That's why I'm putting in the work. You know, you probably build up a little more natural immune system.
You know, I could give you my supplement regime, but I got to check it out with the UFC's new, anti-doping site first.
Get it all,
I don't
want to
give out some info, you know, what's going on. So
too funny. Well, it is a new year, as you said. I guess lots going on. I've stayed busy. I don't know if you got to check out Fury Professional Grappling 8 the other day. If you didn't check it out, the replay is on UFC Fight Pass. It was fun. Had a good time working that. Erin Blanchfield actually worked alongside of me. It was the first time I had a chance to work with her. She was fantastic. Incredibly knowledgeable, incredibly comfortable. She is just cold-blooded is the right word for, like, she'd never done it before. Did she have any nerves, any fear, any concern? Not a damn one, dude. She's just, like, brimming with, so like, hey, yeah, what do you need me to do? Yeah, let's do that. Oh, we're going to do a stand-up over here? Yeah, we'll do that.
That's awesome.
She was awesome. She was
really good. That's very cool. Well, and especially, too, like, she knows that sport, you know, like the back of her hand. So, I mean, that's awesome. And I think, too, you know, like, I think a fighter, especially in her case, or any fighter, you get an opportunity – you step up, you know, and I think any fighter that can get into a cage and step up to the moment, what is this? Like, you just want me to stand in front of a camera? Okay.
You think about, you got people like Jonathan Williams, right, who won't stand in front of any, or Jonathan Martinez, they like get scared of cameras, you know what I mean? And there are people that are nervous, right? But she's one of the first I've ever worked with that wasn't even like, hey, man, you got any tips? Or, hey, what do you think? She was just like, hey, okay, let's go.
So is Hannah Cipher going to do the next one?
I don't think she'll be. There's another one that is not afraid to get in there and throw down, but will probably not be getting any broadcasts anytime soon. But, no, she did a great job.
That's cool.
It was fun.
I only went back and watched the Aljo fight. So the Aljo one.
It was good. We had more submissions on our prelims. We still had some really good matches, but we had more like finishes on the prelims. But then we had the main card was fun, very entertaining. Main event was good. Main event was what we thought it was going to be. You know what I mean? It was Aljamain Sterling, the grappler, but mixed martial artist who looks at this as more of a fight, versus Kevin Dantzler, who's the sport jiu-jitsu guy, who had made it clear, like, dude, I'm going to sit down and pull guard. It's what I do. And, you know, we talked about it going in. He says,
stand up. They stand him up, and then he sits right back down.
He just sat right back down. He's like, nope, I'm not going to.
I was like, he don't care.
He does not care.
But I loved it. I mean, he stuck to his guns.
Because
they got stood up at least three times.
Probably at least three times.
Two or three times.
Yeah, and every time he's just like, okay, you want me to stand up? Cool. Sitting right back down.
Well, it's funny because I thought I saw him. Was it Mirgamadi that did that one? Because it almost felt like I saw him complain at one point, like, bro, I'm just going to get back down. Like, he looked at him like, why
even bother?
And then they start walking, and then he sat down. I was like, that was awesome.
It's so funny because, I talked to him beforehand, and he's like, look, the only reason you want me to stand is so that you can engage me on the feet, so you can take me down.
He was
like, I'm giving you the takedown. But that's not really true because I'm not giving you the takedown where you're controlling the positioning of my legs.
Yeah, 100%.
But it is funny to say that. But, dude, stuck to his gun. And you know what? Shout out to Aljamain, who said, I'm going to grab him by his ankles and I'm going to pull him around the mat. And what did he do? Grabbed him by his ankles and pulled him around the mat. And Kevin Dantzler just said, no, I'm not changing.
I'm not sure how he got onto his back or whatever when he like spun him around and he spun him off. I thought that was a pretty unique way to get rid of him. Was he going for an arm bar?
He was going for an arm bar. He just got up and like Charles Bennett years ago, just swinging him around.
It was awesome. I was like, okay, that's one way I didn't think about trying to get out of an arm bar if you're strong enough to do it.
I was nervous as he was doing it because I thought, it's good. You're trying to put on a show. But if you go back and watch it, like, it's hard, and you can see it in the minute, but obviously as you watch the replay, you can see better. Like, his arm's not very extended at all. He's got the elbow pulled in pretty tight, but you're still like, bro, but you're swinging it. And like, you know what I mean? Like, you could be helping your arm extend.
Yeah, I wonder if he would stop if that came. I was more worried that he was getting so riled up and he was kind of getting just real chippy about it. I thought if there was a moment that he could actually toss his guy off of the mat, that would have been the moment,
There was one time where he dragged him close to the edge, and I thought he was trying to slide him right off the edge.
So when I saw him spinning, I was like, oh, please, please don't let this go where I think it's going, you know, because he easily could have just been like, ugh. But you're right. I mean, like, he knew what it was. He knew what the rule set was. If he wanted to actually have hits, if he wanted to do other stuff, you know, there's a different avenue for that one, you know. I can sense his frustration, you know, and he was trying to appeal to the crowd, you know. And there's one thing, I mean, there was a lot of points where you almost can't count the time where it seemed like he was in the top position because his competitor was asking him into that position every
right.
time. And he never got a chance to really grab any sort of hold. And when he would try to go, make a move for, say, like a headlock or some sort of submission position, he got out of it, like, right away, you know. So it was interesting. I felt bad for him because you could see how bad he wanted to perform, but how he wanted to show up. And I thought he did good.
I thought he put on a show. You know, He made it entertaining. His post-fight speech went kind of viral, which was kind of cool since Punk wasn't there that night. I was doing the interviews. Since this is Erin's first time, we're not going to have her go do the interviews, too.
Yeah.
Like, she did a great job. So I did the interviews. It went pretty viral, you know, several million views or whatever. And because it's Aljamain, I think anything he says, like, it's going to be a little bit polarizing.
Yeah.
And some people, I think, were right on him, where he's like, dude, if you were in the street, you wouldn't sit down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's in a fight, you're not going to sit down. And then he threw in the end, he's like, don't let another man drag you around by the ankles in front of your loved ones or whatever, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah.
It was the UFC Fight Pass Twitter account that put out. They cut me out because when I got the mic back, I was like, solid life advice. You know what I mean? Like, it's fair. But again, it's like 50-50. And, we talked about a little bit going
it's still
in.
It's still a bit sour grapes.
It is sour grapes,
you know,
right? It's right. He's 100% right. Like, you would never do that in a street fight, but it's not a street
fight.
I actually had somebody.
You agreed to the rules to.
I actually had somebody text me, and I'll leave who it was unnamed, but it was pretty funny because I thought it was hilarious. It was like, if it was a street fight, he'd hit you in the back of the head with a bottle, so don't say that. And I was like, what? That's a good point too.
That's a good point. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, we love seeing these fighters get these opportunities to compete in other avenues, get money, you know, stay active, all this other kind of stuff. But, you know, you can't hold it to the same, you know, degree of what you're expecting in your normal fights, because that's not your normal fight. You know, it just kind of. I appreciated his performance. I thought he did a great job. Not that it took away from me, but I just felt at the end, I was like, come on, Aljo. Like, you know, can you really be that upset? You knew what you were getting into. And I kind of felt like he was a bit of a sore sport there at the end, you know, after it was done, to sort of just do it. But I get it, you know. But if you're not happy with the rule set, don't agree to the rule set. Don't do it, you know. But I just felt bad because
– I see both sides of it. You know what I mean? I'm torn on both sides.
Because I love Aljo, and I love when he gets in there and does what he thinks. And I thought he did a great performance. But at the end of the night, I was like, bro, you can't bitch about – what you knew you're getting.
You knew exactly
what you're doing.
That's even when I went to him with the interview, I was like, well, you knew what you were getting into.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he did.
That's like, Ryan? Is it Ryan? Who's the guy that always just sits down and tries to do like the M&R rolls right from the get-go?
Oh, like Ryan Hall?
Yeah, Ryan Hall. It's like people know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
And like, but in his situation, it is an MMA fight. You can do whatever that you want to. But it's
he's still doing that.
But he's still going to do it, you know? So like, if you know you're going into a guy that's going to do what he does, you know, like, and then you get mad because he does what you knew he was going to do in the first place, it's like, bro, you're just sad, just mad.
It was credit to Aljamain for putting on a show, credit for Kevin Dantzler to not breaking like his form. He's like, this is what I do. So
yeah, because Aljo's not the guy you want to slip up and mess up, because Aljo was right there. It was funny because he had enough energy and enough control from when he was in that top position to kind of look up and like talk to the crowd and like talk to the stuff. I'm like, bro, you got like a massive dangerous guy in front of you.
I thought the same thing.
That's right there that can lock you up, and you're taking your attention away.
I thought the same thing. He was like, a couple times he's looking at the crowd. He's like, is this fun?
Is this fun?
is this fun?
I laughed my ass off when he did that, though. I was like, this is funny.
It's funny, but I was like, man, if he inverts on you like right now while you're saying that, like, it would be bad. So it was interesting. It was fun. They put on a show, and it was fun. Alexander Romanov got a big decision win. That one scared me a little bit. I know you said you only watched the main event.
Yeah, I didn't see this one.
Alexander Romanov, at one point, you know, heavyweights, he was going with Chris Daukaus, and that's an open mat on a platform. There was one point where they got to the edge, and Romanov, he had to step down off the side because he was close. And when he did, like, it was like something in his hip popped. Because all of a sudden, he was like, ooh, and he was real slow to move and like real slow. And I'm like, oh, dude, don't tell me we got somebody hurt. You know what I mean? Like, anytime we get these UFC contenders.
Did they pause to reset them?
Not really. He was a little slow. They did bring him back up because obviously he slipped off the side. He was a little slow to get back, and he's kind of hobbling a little bit, but he seemed to be okay by the end of it. But it was just nerve, right? Because anytime, like I said, we get to use the UFC contenders, always worry, man, that – I mean, not that we haven't seen it happen like with – Cub Swanson, when he got his knee destroyed.
Especially the big boys, man. Like, yeah. You're moving that much weight, man. Just a slight little move can really mess something up.
It really can. Pat Sabatini got the Silhouette Stretch. So it was cool to see that one on Nico Price, which
I'll have to go back and watch that. I heard about that.
Really good submission. Yeah. And
I did see that. That was dope.
Oh, bro. It was almost like Nico was like, what the F is this, dude? Like, what are we doing?
It was so effortless how he pulled that. So like, fast. I mean, like, his setup for it, I was like, oh, my God, why do not more people do that? I mean, it was really, really interesting because it looked like he was just going for like to take the back, but yep. the way he hooked the leg and stuff, it was gnarly, dude.
Beautiful. That was amazing. Pat Sabatini. That was amazing. Obviously, Nico, man, Nico's the greatest dude. He was just all energy like the whole week, and he was respectful and just a great dude.
You got to tap on that move, man. Yeah, like you literally could fuck your knee up and everything on that. What's it called? A
Silhouette Stretch.
Yeah, that was gnarly.
It was good. Fatima Klein, by the way, got a decision win. She's our women's flyweight champ. Keep an eye. If you haven't seen Fatima Klein fight yet, she's a great grappler as well. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, young, undefeated. She's our
saying
flyweight champ.
All the right
champ.
Things already. And Brazilian.
She's our flyweight champ, and she's probably going to be – she wants to fight for the – she was supposed to fight for the strawweight belt. She had a late replacement, so we had to move it up a division. So it was the only reason she fought at flyweight. But she's good, so keep an eye on her. So anyway, very professional grappling. It's fun.
Strawweight – can fight it flyweight.
She can fight too. Like she can grapple, she can fight. It was super cool. So that was a fun event. So if you didn't check it out, check out the replay of that. We also got to do we got to be a part of Paul Felder's CFFC Hall of Fame induction. So he became our second member of the CFFC Hall of Fame. Aljamain Sterling, of course, was the first one, and so just like the last one, we had a nice big dinner and a big gathering of everybody to kind of honor him, and then you got like this cool championship belt that's special commemorative, and this commemorative medallion as well that one of our sponsors in the jewelry store makes them for us, man. Spivak Jewelers, it's super, super cool. They put a lot of care into it, man. So the whole thing was cool. But so anyway, because I was there, I had a little bit of the audio from it, and so I want to take you guys behind the scenes of Paul Felder's induction speech. We'll have some highlights out and stuff, but I figured, you know what, might as well get a chance to listen to it all. It starts out, it was kind of this back and forth. It was pretty cool. Rob Hadak, our CEO, had a couple stories along the way, and he brought up some people. So you'll hear, and this is the last story that he had. It talks about him recalling how Paul Felder's announcing career started, which, to be honest, I didn't even know that this was how it started, because he actually not only fought for CFFC, but he did some commentating for CFFC as well. So everything that he's doing in the UFC now, it started out in the CFFC as well. So you'll hear Rob started out, and then you'll also hear Paul mention Sal, which just was cool because this is who I ended up sitting next to. It was his coach from when he was just 12 years old, man. His coach from when he was 12 till he was 24. And he was just like, Paul was able to invite any guest he wanted, And
that's dope.
This was the guy he wanted. His childhood coach that like started him out in martial arts, which was cool as well. So when you hear the name Sal, that's who it is. But anyway, this is the audio from Paul Felder's CFFC Hall of Fame induction.
All right, so one last quick story, because I deserve credit for this guy's commentary career. Long story short, we're at 2300 Arena. I don't know, it's 2015, 2016. At the time, we were on CBS Sports. And I forget who it was, Brian Palico or somebody, was running late, couldn't make the show, last minute pulled out. Paul being Paul, had a couple beers in him, was at the bar. I said, Paul, I need a favor, man. He's like, what's up? I said, can you commentate tonight? He's like, bro, I've had a couple beers. I go, doesn't matter. Like, I need you. He's like, I don't know, man. I said, I'll give you a couple $100. He's like, all right, I'll do it. So he walks up. He does the show. At that time, we didn't have production like we have today. So I couldn't listen in. I had no clue what he was saying. So Monday morning, I always have my huddle up with CBS Sports. They call and they go, here's what we like. Here's what we don't like. First thing out of their mouth was, who was the new guy? I was like, oh, shit. Like, here we go. And I'm like, it's Paul Felder, but let me explain something. Like, the other guy, they're like, no. He was fantastic. And I was like, really? They're like, he was awesome. So I said, okay. So we finished our call. I called Paul after. I go, hey, man, I had a call with CBS. He goes, yeah, and? I was like, they thought you were great. He's like, and? I was like, you want to do the next show? He's like, how much are you paying me? So I was like, we negotiated, and he got what he wanted. So at this time, I'd like to induct Paul Felder into the Cage Fury Fighting Championships Hall of Fame with an incredible piece created by our friends Josh, Gary, and the entire family. So, Paul, I'm going to open it up and show it to you. We also have a commemorative CFFC Championship belt. CFFC Championship belt with the side plates. Hall of Fame 2023, Paul Felder.
No way.
Paul Felder.
Thanks, everybody, for coming out. I've been telling Christine all week, you know, for somebody that, like Rob said, makes their living basically now talking on TV, talking about the best athletes in the world, I think, having been one myself, this is still harder to do these types of things. But to see all you guys come out and to be able to do this for CFFC, the company that basically launched my career in fighting, in friendships, in the ability to be able to call fights. Rob had no idea I'd be able to do that. You know what I mean? It was kind of like, all right, well, I feel like he's got the energy and the personality to do this. Didn't really even know anything about my acting background, which would make complete sense if you'd known that. Like, it would actually be up my alley to be able to do that. But not even knowing that gave me the opportunity. And they didn't give me those easy fights. And that's why I remember to this day, I wanted to fight for that company that had the white gloves. And I remember thinking, like, if I can do that, that's legit. Those guys seem legit. I've seen their fights. I see these guys. On the regional scene, you start to know who's good. Who do you look out for? And I remember I fought for New Breed Fighting way back. But it was the guys that went on to CFFC. I was like, oh, that's when you become legit. And I remember I wanted the white gloves. My debut, they're out of their CFFC white gloves. When I fought Imtumi Gudrum, who wasn't an easy fight to give me off the bat, I had the name of the company on there, whatever the brand of the shitty gloves that we used back then. Now, yeah, KO on the thing. But I was like, but they're white? And they're like, or you can have the black gloves that say CFFC. I was like, I want the white gloves. And I got the white gloves, and I knocked him out with that flying knee. And I still remember sitting in that octagon when they took that awesome man M2M out. He was a warrior, and he went out, and I remember sitting Cesar on my knees because that was the respectful thing to do for somebody when they got knocked out in the tournament. And flying knee, and then bang, and then a couple unnecessary shots on the way out. But you guys really helped everything that I am today, whether it be broadcaster, whether it be, you know, I got to watch you be a dad. I got to watch Sal be a dad. So thank you so much for everything, man. Sometimes I feel like I don't give the credit to the people that deserve it most. You're one of them. A lot of people in this room, for everything they've done for me, are those people. Sal, thanks for coming out and being a part of this, because, you know, it's been a lifetime of martial arts that I got to meet Rob and all these people in this room is because of martial arts. And you're definitely full circle in that whole thing.
Don't
so
make me cry, dude.
You know, I feel like I'm going to cry. But yeah, thank you. And and just last thing, like, Rob came to my debut when he did manage me early on. It was never about money. It was always about pushing me forward. And I've always respected that about this company and the people that work for it, is that it truly is about putting out a product that is legit and worth it without compromising being a human being along the way. And that shines through in Rob and everything he does, because it's not about always business. It's about the passion and the love for this sport. He was a wrestler himself. He knows the competition. Aljamain, he recognizes what me and somebody like this fucking champion over here go through. Let's give it up one more time for everything Aljamain's done too. But, you know, I want to say that I'm glad that I get this honor, but I'm glad that he got to do it before me, because the man was a dominant champion in CFFC, a dominant champion in the UFC, and he's going to be a champion in the future. Again, he's an unbelievable athlete. So to do this after him, Aljo, I respect everything you do, man. So to do it right after you, buddy, you know, I feel honored to be in that category, buddy. So to CFFC and everybody came out, I love you guys. Christine, I love you, and, you know, thank you guys. Now let's fucking have fun. Great. Thank you. No, thanks, buddy.
So there you go, the Irish Dragon, Paul Felder in the CFFC Hall of Fame. So many cool things from that, but I just liked hearing from Paul, man, and the bond between him and Rob Hadak is pretty cool to see. But you know, hearing how he's so excited to be fighting in the white gloves of the CFFC, you know what I mean? Like, that's such a big deal when you think about. And it's why I love doing this, is the journey, man. We see these guys at the highest level, but you forget all those little stops along the way. Yeah. They're like, you know, if I ever turn pro, I'll know I made it. You know, if I ever fight in that organization with the white gloves, I'll know I made it. If I, you know, and then next thing you know, you just keep making it and moving forward and making it move forward, making it move forward. Next thing you know, you've had the career that Paul Felder has, and now the broadcasting career that he has. And I don't know, super cool to see. And
that's awesome.
I also thought it was really cool to hear him say how he thought it was cool that Aljamain got to go in first, because there was a little discussion over like who should go in first, and you know, do you disrespect anybody by putting one in before the other? I mean, they were kind of the first two off the top that we knew, like, those two guys are going to the CFFC Hall of Fame, but you want to respectfully make sure it gets the right done. But for even Paul to say, look, man, I did a great job, but he went one step further than me because he became UFC champion as well, so he deserves this honor even more. I don't know. I thought that was cool. Just classy from Paul.
Yeah, that's very cool. Man, it's always great to see these guys when they kind of give almost like their origin stories.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's so neat, and I think we forget that a lot of times, especially the guy like Paul Felder that has came so far in the UFC and then where his career's at now. You know, like, we're kind of seeing him almost move into this whole other career. You know, we've seen his crazy journey in the UFC and then where he is now, and then to hear kind of the origin story. It's awesome. It's so cool.
It was so cool because there was one part of audio that I considered sharing, but I didn't. But this is great. So, So Paul Felder made his professional debut in CFFC. He made his commentating debut in CFFC. He also met his wife through CFFC because she was a ring girl at one of the events. And the story was told about how he asked about her. And as you can imagine, you know, Paul Felder or most any professional fighter, a couple of frosty beverages deep, asking about a young lady that happened to be a ring car girl that night. It might not be the dream scenario of my dear fair lady. You know, it was funny to hear the way he asked about her originally, but you know, they met and now they're married and have kids together and stuff. And it was just kind of cool to hear the whole story. So good stuff. Good stuff. Listen, I think, you know, I like being able to share moments like that. So I've always debated sometimes about, is this an interview show or is this a experience show, whatever. But if I can share stuff like that, I want to be able to do it. So hopefully you guys are cool with that and moving in that direction. But if you like what you listen to, I will say, take a moment to make sure that you're subscribed to us, that you rate and review us if you can. We certainly would appreciate that. And then if you want to take your game up to the next level, Patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow is the place to do that, where you can support the show for as little as $3 a month. You get, of course, exclusive access to the and a half episodes that will be returning next week with the return of the UFC schedule. And you can be like wonderful people like Josh Hernandez.
He stepped it up even more so.
And I do want to say that while we are enjoying a frosty beverage on this lovely afternoon, It's a cold Wednesday afternoon here in Las Vegas. It required some cold, frosty beverages as well. But, Josh, I'm going to let you know, I apologize. We were not able to get the Busch Light just yet. My man's a Busch Light fan. And so, to
one of the few left.
To honor him.
Him and his wife are big Busch
Light. To honor him and his wife, we will be, in a future episode, getting some Busch Light. But I will say, I stopped by the store today on the way to your house, and there was no Busch Light there. So it was a little.
I'm gonna have to talk with them.
I don't know about how the Busch Light distribution is around here.
Yeah, right.
So I don't. I'm gonna check another place closer to my house. Then maybe we gotta go to like a specialty
liquor
store.
Liquor World down the street.
Maybe we gotta cross the tracks and go somewhere a little.
Might have to go back to the Midwest.
You never know. So we're not having Busch Light today, but Mr. and Mrs. Hernandez, just you know that in honor of you supporting us, we will be doing that very, very soon.
Yeah, Josh was awesome. Josh renewed for the yearly, so he got that little bit of a discount. And want to appreciate, thank him very much for doing that. And yeah, man, kudos. And it's funny, when Morgan asked me, and I was like, hey, by the way, and I told him the story of Josh hitting us up about some Busch Light, and he was like, Busch Light? I was like, hey, if the man asked us to drink Busch Light.
If he says it's his beer, I'm sure there's a lot of people that look at us and be like, PBR? The hell are you talking about? PBR. I'm like, eh.
That's true. So Busch Light, remember our boy, I know you, I don't put out many tweets, but Troxel.
He put out,
John Troxel put out his thing talking about PBRs, and I was like, bro, respect, sir, respect.
At least two of the likes came from me and you then, because I liked it as well. I saw it too. He's talking about normally I'd pound down a couple of these on New Year's
Eve.
They
were like the 16-ounce pounders. I was like, my dude.
Did you do anything on New Year's? By the way, I
– No, I just kicked it easy. Yeah. Goes hit me up for some stuff, but, you know, honestly, I was just like, man, I just was happy to just sit on the couch. So yeah. I watched Netflix. I caught up on, like, a show that I've been looking at. Like, my neighbors – it's so funny. My neighborhood – it's funny – they always let fireworks out for all the big holidays. These mother effers were out there like 4 or 5 hours early starting the fireworks. And I was like trying to let the dog out. And he doesn't want to go out because the fireworks are going off. And I was like, oh, come on. But to their credit, I think they did so much day drinking that actually by 12:30, it was done. 12:30, they were done. I was like, this is awesome. Because like on 4th of July – it's going on. It's all night long. I mean, it could be 3 o'clock in the morning, and there's still some guys not far off letting it go. And kudos to, like, the Vegas scene. I don't know where you guys are all at, but, like, people here in Vegas, I don't know if they come from Cali, they're coming from Arizona, they come from wherever, they like their fireworks. So they buy, like, the good shit, the good loud stuff. So, unfortunately for your animals, it kind of sucks. But if you like the to watch free fireworks, it's all over the place. But, yeah, so I was grateful that this New Year's Eve – it wasn't too bad, but honestly, yeah, I kicked it. I took it easy. I caught up with this. There's a show on Netflix I've been trying to watch forever called Who is Aaron Carter? It's like an action sort of flick.
Okay. Wasn't Aaron Carter like a Backstreet Boy?
That's A-A-R-O-N. This is E-R-I-N.
Okay. I was like, you've been waiting to watch this reality show on the Backstreet Boys?
You know, I finally decided 2024 is going to be my year to catch up on all the Backstreet noise. No, but it's actually it's an action.
I like it.
It's an action series. It's like one of those. It's weird because they called it like a limited series. No, oddly enough, they spoke English. I didn't have any subtitles at all. But it's dope,
it's
dude. It was really really good. But you know, this is so funny. So I stayed up to about 2:30 in the morning watching that, and I was like, okay, and then go to bed. And end up like sleeping to like 8:30 in the morning. But since I slept a little later than normal and I stayed up, I woke up like with a headache. I felt like I went out the night before. I was like, this is stupid.
You weren't even drinking or anything?
I wasn't even drinking. I was like, why do I feel like I drank just from staying up late and then waking up? It was just so I guess it would be the 5 hours of sleep or whatever.
Getting old's great,
dude.
Huh?
I was like, this is stupid.
I'm hungover from staying up too late.
From staying up too late. I have a headache. Like, this is ridiculous. But no, I took it easy, and I was glad. I was glad to kind of take it easy. I mean, and plus in Vegas, man, like, that's the one night I really, you know, that's one of the nights I feel like don't be on the road, especially if you're going to go have a couple drinks
legit
or whatever.
Night.
Like, you know, take an Uber or whatever, and so I just decided to skip it. I let the youngsters have that night.
I did the same. I flew home from Philadelphia, and I got upgraded on the way home, so I may have started the day a little early with a cup of wine.
You were like the fireworks.
I can relate to those people that started a little too early. I was like, well, I'm already here. I got upgraded. It's a 5-hour flight. I'll take a little red wine. Let's
go. That's a solid flight distance. Yeah.
By the time I got home, I was like, yeah, let's just – I crashed out early. So,
yeah.
My wife and kid got to enjoy that. All right, listen, the drought with USC events is almost over, but, of course, there are some stories out there. Let me ask you, which one of these headlines has grabbed me the most? Is it Conor McGregor? And his message about coming back at middleweight and the giggle that he offered as he delivered it. That's pretty good, actually.
He's so ridiculous.
It was ridiculous. It was hilarious. It made me laugh, though. Like, yeah. I like that ridiculous Connor. You know what I mean?
I said the exact same thing.
I love
thing.
That Connor.
I
it cracked me up. Like, so over-the-top goofy.
Wine,
like, that's funny.
Like, the early on in the wine night Connor, yeah. like where he's got like the happy wine buzz.
I love that Connor.
Like that's before he calls up his friend. You know, like things, a couple more drinks and he's like, yo. And they're like, oh.
Who's hitting the slopes tonight?
Who's hitting the slopes tonight?
Yeah, I
like,
agree.
I thought it was – I chuckled watching
it. I
was like, dude, this is the Connor we like.
I love that guy.
This is the Connor
that's,
we like.
That's
you know?
The one I see. All right, so is it that one? Is it the backlash and the breakdown of Sean Strickland and everything that's around him, which I'm kind of a – well, I don't – I feel bad for Sean Strickland, man. I feel like we saw a little bit of honesty from him. Now I feel like people are piling on him, though I get people are calling him out from his hypocrisy. But I would say that anybody that listens to this show, I think we – I mean, not that it should be that hard to disseminate what's going on with Sean Strickland, but I think we've said this for a while. Like, there's some obvious pain behind all this stuff that he comes in. And I don't know. So we got to see it. We got to see that emotion and – I don't know, man. I feel like a lot of people like piling on him kind of I feel like kind of unfairly, but I guess it's because it's kind of hypocritical. Like I understand why Ian Gary would be frustrated and all that, but
yeah.
So anyway, there's that. Or is Hamzat Shimaev ever gonna be healthy again? Like what are those pictures?
Oh. And then he removed it and then he put some other stuff after that. I don't know what's going on with that.
So out of those the stories, did any of those grab you, compel you the most?
I would say it has to be the Connor news because one I'm not too versed on what's going on with the Hamzat. I just actually saw that this morning, so I didn't really
see. And you're right. In fact, to be fair, none of us really know all what's going on yet. I just know that he posted more pictures of him being ill and being sick, and maybe he's fine now. But man,
are they still there? Because I mean, I thought
he deleted them.
I was gonna say it because by the time I went to his timeline, it was all gone, and there was like some other stuff. I mean, I
just wonder if he's ever gonna be 100% again, man. And again, he may be. Maybe this was him just thinking about his struggles and things he's gone through. Again, we don't know the full context yet. But good Lord, man, that dude is just had struggles, and he is, dude. When he's on, he is a scary dude.
Yeah, and so I guess if you had to rate the ones I was able to think more about, it would be Connor, and then obviously the Strickland, and then probably the Hamzat one. The Strickland one, I mean, I agree that, you know, of course, when you go out there and you say a bunch of shit, you kind of welcome that back. That's just karma.
Yeah.
But I haven't – it hasn't changed what I already felt about Sean, like any of the sort of thing. We already kind of knew what we were getting from him. The fact that, you know, others were jumping in or maybe more people are jumping, I think – you know, for a while there, I was really surprised how many people jumped against Gary so quickly because there was such a hype train and so many people. I feel like maybe it's just the pendulum's just swinging back a little bit, and some of the people that were waiting to kind of voice their stuff now came back out or something. It doesn't change anything about how, you know, I feel about Sean because Sean's always been sort of the same thing.
Yeah.
But like you said, I mean, like, I think when he lashed out and when he said something in the past, obviously, it comes from a point of, like you said, pain, things in this history. You know, that's why Sean is the way he is. It doesn't – I mean, it's nothing new, at least for us.
I think that's, I think maybe it's just because we spent so much time around him. Like, I don't know. I feel like people are like, oh, so you're not as tough as you said you were, or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we always kind of knew he came from a broken place, and, like, you don't get out of that shit unscathed, you know what I mean? And this is why – I will say this. I feel like I've seen a lot more people lately saying, hey, man, some of this trash talk, like, can we leave – family out of it and stuff like that. I hope it's starting to swing that way, though. You know, I've always stood in the same place. Race, religion, family, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
And I know some people are like, it's trash talk. People say mean things.
Unless you're just saying, like, your mom's too fat. Like, that's been around since we were
kids. Oh, yeah, that's fine. No, don't talk about
the wives. Don't talk about the wives. Yeah. Don't talk about the kids.
So, I don't know. But
if his mom is fat, it's okay.
Especially if she's so fat.
She's so fat. She wears a hula hoop as a belt.
See, that's okay. I mean, you can say no.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
No, but I don't know. I do feel like I feel like maybe it's just my imagination that there is some people pushing back. They're like, hey guys, maybe there should be a limit in where we set.
But I feel like there's always been that voice of reason. We'll call that the voice of reason. Like, hey guys, at some point, you know, do you want to say? But we've also said too, like, do you ever want to say something that you're not comfortable one saying in front of a person and having it come back on you?
Right.
You know, like if you're going to go out and talk about a guy and his wife, and then people want to shit on you, you kind of almost – you know that it's going to come. It's going to happen that way. And in the same sense, you know, like Sean – we've always said that Sean's kind of had those moments where he lets glimpses into his past, but he tries to put it in a self-deprecating sort of way, you know, when he wants to bring up, you know, things that he dealt with as a kid, you know, whether it be abuse and the other sort of things. always did it sort of in a self-deprecating light, which anybody that, you know, has seen some of that other stuff, it, clearly in my eyes, that's a, it's a, it's a scream for help. You know, it's a scream for, like, I have issues, but this is how I'm trying to talk about it and try to work through it.
It's a defense mechanism, man.
It's a defense mechanism.
We've said it all along.
You know, so, I mean, but it's hard to have people not say something back because he kind of started, he put some of those initial salvos out
there. You're not allowed
there.
To just get off scot-free.
You can't get, I mean, you kind of open up the door, you know, like, you could fire the first volley, but you got to know there's going to be a volley comes back at some point, you know, like, nobody ever really gets, you know, away scot-free, you know, sort of deal. But do I think it's going to change the way Sean is, or do I think he's going to actually sit back at the end of the night and say, oh, people really don't like me. It's not going to affect me. He has his, he has his friends. He has his things. He has what's going on. It's not going to be that big of a deal, but I mean, that being said, it doesn't mean that there can't be moments that come up when he's reading things where he can't, you know, feel bad about the past and have that other sort of stuff. But on the flip side, you know, you go out there and you start chastising this guy about his family relationship and the way things are with his wife and possibly an ex-husband. That person's going to be feeling some shit as well, you know? Yeah. So you kind of, you know, you, it's just karma coming back, you know? But I was, if anything, I was glad that Gary, if it helped him deal with the situation, because he was so just crazy quiet about the whole thing. I knew he was dealing with the illness, what it was with the chest pneumonia and the other sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So he was just very, very silent. And I felt, not that I felt bad, I was just, I was wondering why I hadn't seen anything really sort of come back from
his
side.
Well, you know what sucks what he was dealing with? Because, right, I mean, look, we just been talking about how illness is going around everywhere, right? And he's sick. But, of course, you got the people that are out there that are like, nah, he's not sick. He's just ducking.
He doesn't want that fight,
you know, And you're like, come on, man. And it's hard. And look, man, you want to tune it out. You want to be like, I don't see that. I don't care. The public opinion out there doesn't matter. But it does. It gets to you, man. You know what I mean? Like, you still see those hateful messages. You still see people talking shit. Everybody wants to be liked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be liked. Yeah. And so it can't help but get to you a little bit. So to your point, it probably was a little bit of vindication for Gary, right? To be like, yeah, bro, see now? You know, what goes around comes around.
But I did like how he sort of, not that he ended like with like, hey, we're cool now or whatever, but it was like, I like that he was like, well, hey, just have a good new year or whatever, or something like that. If anything else is like, okay, you felt something too, you know, like, you know, that's why we don't do these sort of things. Not that he phrased that, but, you know, like, have a happy new year or whatever. Like, so maybe it's the kind of thing that, you know, it's either Sean just leaves it and does whatever, or Sean either doubles back down and goes back at it again. I hope it just kind of whatever, because it wasn't like it was a great conversation anyways, you know, like, regardless of whatever his situation is with his family, it's not anything to do with us, and it's not like we need another fighter that we respect as a fighter and like as a person, you know, with all of his faults and whatnot, you know. You just don't like to see him keep going back down that route, you know. So it's kind of crazy. But that being said, when you ask me the three things, obviously the Conor McGregor. I mean, like, it's funny because USA Today reached out to me yesterday and they were like, hey, we want to do a video with Mackenzie Salmon. I just say Salmon because it's S-A-L-M-O-M, so I assume it's Salmon.
Yeah, Salmon.
They want to do a video talking about the Conor fight, you know, and they want to have one of our staffers get on there and talk about fight prediction, other kind of stuff. So I suggested Farah. I said, I think she'd be great, you know, and I think it'd be awesome to have two women going out there and just killing it. And I knew Farah would kill it. But also when they're kind of showing me a little bit,
trying to make some social changes
just,
happen,
man,
bro.
You know, I'm an ally, bro. So when they sort of saw the initial script and they were talking about, you know, just giving fight prediction, you know, talk about it, they talked about it in very certainties. And one of the things I just wrote back, I was like, and I haven't seen the actual thing, how it went, because Mackenzie ended up getting sick so far, did the whole thing on her own.
Oh,
so
wow.
It would be interesting to see what she did with it. But my two cents to them when I wrote back, I was like, hey, my two cents, but let's possibly save ourselves. You know, we've heard nothing from the UFC saying this is actually going to happen. You know, so if you want to talk about it and you want to do this, I think that's great. But, you know, maybe set it up with the possibility. We're not even quite sure if this is actually going to happen. This could be Conor just out there having a little fun. Mm-hmm. He could have been wine buzzing. He's like, hey, Want to see me stir up some shit? Like, you know, especially when you see that, like, bro, he did the Dr. Evil laugh at the end. Like,
so
you know,
true.
Like, okay, I'm not sure if I can take this for face value, but it was awesome to see. I thought it was a hilarious video, but as much as, you know, it's the kind of thing, you know, when you talk about
It feels almost weird talking about journalists. Look at you being a responsible journalist.
Here's us even talking about, and it's like when we talked about before, like Connor's never going to make 155, and you got everybody coming out of the woodwork saying the only thing that makes sense and that's legit for the division and maybe sets up a possible title is he's got to be at 155.
Right.
Connor's never going to make 155 again.
Never.
He's never going to get there. 170 is probably an issue. 170 should have been what Chandler was pushing for to try to cut in between the two. Chandler is as much as however he can get, and he's yoked out and he's whatever. He's not a 185er.
Right.
Connor's coming in and he's probably walking around over 200 pounds and he's huge. Like this fight, he's done it again of finding a way. If this gets made at 185, he's found another way to make a fight be perfectly catered to him. He's had the guy that's been sitting on the sidelines waiting for him, and he's going to have him fight up 30 pounds heavier than what he should be fighting at.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's ridiculous.
And, oh, by the way, didn't let you know, like, I've been bulking up this whole time. The whole time you were like, dude, it sure is going to be hard for him to come back down. And the whole time he's like, I'm not coming back down.
As much as, you know, but, I mean, I guess
it's true
that give him the kudos that when there was that clip from the Ultimate Fighter when they were, like, jarring around and they're talking about the fight and he was Chandler was kind of along the lines of 55. What are we talking? Blah blah blah. I'm paraphrasing. And he's like 185. And he and Chandler kind of thinks about it. Whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But there was that moment.
There was
where
that pause.
Like, oh shit! Like that's ridiculous. You know. So
we
knew he was going to take the fight at any weight class because he just wants it to happen. I mean, it's going to be a huge payday. He's sitting on the sidelines waiting for it right now. I think he's done a good job of managing his money and he's doing what he's done. But it's just hard to I hope it happens, but the likelihood that it still comes to fruition, I mean, there's still a lot of questions, you know, but 185 makes a lot of sense to me in the sense that Connor's never going to get down to 155. And we brought it up in our spinning back leg, and every one of our guys were like, it's got to be at 55. It's got to be at 55. I think it's because they're trying to make sense because they think that
as Connor's name is involved, you take the rules out.
You got to throw it out the window.
You throw the rules out.
You
got
to throw it out. I mean, like, but it's
no. I haven't seen the piece, so no disrespect to anybody, but no, it doesn't have to be at 55. It's not going to be at 55.
I think they're just trying to think of ways that, you know, like, okay, well, why does it make sense to take a contender for the lightweight out of the this lineup to put them towards some if there isn't a possibility of throwing it into a title match after it? Like,
because you could give Connor a title at any
weight
class,
right?
You know what I mean?
And that's I can see Connor saying,
I mean,
it beats him at 185, and he's like, I beat your 155 challenger. give me the title 100%. Shot next, you know?
I mean, dude, how hard would it be to be like, well, hold on. Didn't Leon Edwards get a title shot by beating Nate Diaz, who's what? A lightweight?
Yeah.
How about me? You know what I mean? Like, so I can see him doing that. He's like, okay, you don't have to justify it. When Connor's involved, like, you don't need the rules. But I'll tell you what, you have kind of changed my opinion because I watched that video like you and I laughed. I thought it was good. But I honestly thought, I was like, he's just bluffing. He's having fun. Like, they'll do it at 70. Like, they'll do it at 70. But the more you say it, the more I think that maybe he's serious, that he does want to do it at 85.
I think he's serious.
And it was gamesmanship the whole time because, like, Chandler – I mean, not that Chandler can't put on weight. I mean, the guy's not afraid to lift a weight or two.
Yeah.
But you see the way he works out and the way he conducts himself. Like, I think it would be a chore for him to get to 85. I don't know if his frame could support it.
Well, and the fact of, like, if he's even trying to get it to where there's a healthy separation between the two that the commission even lets it happen, he would have to put on fat as well. Like, there's no way he's going to get that much muscle. I mean, he could bulk, but – and especially if it comes down to it – he would have to be bulking. He needs to start his bulking.
That's what I'm saying.
Right now.
Right now.
You know, so he could do it where it's more muscle instead of just trying to make it to a crash weight.
Wow.
I mean, granted, he could try to water load the shit out of himself, I guess. You know, but then he's going to go in on fight night so dramatically less, knowing that Connor's going to put anywhere between 12 to 15 pounds back on that night probably. Connor's going to be fighting. If it's at 185, Connor's going to be fighting probably at 200 or more pounds on fight night.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous for Chandler to fight. I mean, he's already shorter.
Heavy
he's
hitter.
Undersigned.
You're facing a heavy hitter who's not looking to outwork you for five rounds, but is rather looking to land the one big shot.
Right.
What do we know about Michael Chandler? He tends to get hit early.
Yep.
You know what I mean? If he can survive that, you know, he'll push past it. But
and if he's going to try to go through that barrage to get his hands on Connor, hoping he's going to try to get him down, he's going to eat a lot of powerful shots. And we've seen it doesn't take too many. It doesn't take too many.
Connor's got that natural. Probably he's got good technique, timing.
It's ridiculous.
So.
I mean, I want the fight to happen for him, for Chandler to make money. I still don't know if it's actually going to happen, but I have no doubts that 185 is 100% what UFC's or what he's pushing for. I think the UFC even just got to justify it. Like, why are we going to pay all this much money for a fight that means absolutely nothing? There's no belt on the line. There's no whatever. But we've also said, too, you know, like, fights like this, when you have, like, a big guy like Conor or whatever, doesn't need to be a title to headline a pay-per-view.
Conor
Put
Nate,
the right
Conor,
event.
What was it, Conor Nate 3.
Conor Nate 3
right?
would do
I mean,
it.
Dude, we know that's going to be a headliner. We know that's going to do huge money.
It'd be bigger than this one.
Be bigger than this one?
A lot bigger.
Absolutely would.
You know?
Absolutely would be. So... All right, well, we'll see how
it's
that all
crazy.
Plays out. We got lots of announcements coming over the next couple weeks, you can imagine. I thought for sure that Conor was going to be at UFC 300. Now, obviously, it's not looking that way. It looks like it's going to be at the summertime. You know,
well, hat tip the UFC. If they're trying to keep it and stick to 6 months, you know.
That's what I was going to ask you. I wonder if they're even – now, again, we don't know the full scenario of how this all played out. And there's a lot of things. There's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
You know, well, we've got certain champions available that we think would do better. We think 300 is a big enough thing that we don't need Conor for it to be big. You know what I mean? Whereas,
right.
So there's a whole lot of things that
yeah.
could be. But I do wonder. That did occur to me, and I know where you're going with that, with the whole drugs program switchover. You know, now, look, he was under USADA for the last couple months. So, you know – is it better to push to June so now that you have a full 6 months under this new program so nobody can say that, well, he didn't even do the full 6 months on this new program. So I don't know. Probably that didn't even factor in.
I think they want to make sure he's good to go.
That could very well be as well.
You know, like you start putting the marketing budget right behind it and all the other kind of stuff and then say he pops.
Yeah.
In that time, then you fuck your card.
Yeah.
At least if you get to June, you get another chance for
another time
to make sure and to help build that. But I mean, like International Fight Week, I'm trying to think even who was the big one for last week. I feel like last year's, and I'm sorry if I'm going to make somebody feel bad, I feel like I don't remember it being like, oh, a stellar like fight week. Like we haven't had a crazy like main event. Like they could use a Conor on it. Now watch it be a huge card. I see you pulling it up.
I'm going to try to pull it up because I feel terrible because, like, look, it runs together and there's somebody right now that's just going, you idiot. No, you're right. It was – I mean, well, I won't say you're right. It's Alexander Volkanovski versus Yair Rodriguez and Pantoja versus Moreno. So two good fights.
Yeah.
But you're right. Now, I mean, Volkanovski, superstar.
Maybe because it didn't feel like it was, like the biggest like fight weeks.
I don't think because Volkanovski is a global superstar right now.
Yeah.
But I don't think a lot of people are giving Yair Rodriguez a lot of chances to beat
him. It was
him.
a rejoin. It was the unification of
right.
The
and
belts.
I don't think a lot of people are giving a chance. And then it's Pantoja and Moreno, which turned out to be a phenomenal fight.
That was a good fight.
But again, the flyweights and Pantoja doesn't resonate the way Moreno does.
So those are good fights. Those are good
it was
fights.
Good, but you're
those
right. It wasn't like, oh my God, you remember that?
It wasn't like
was
yeah,
a, you know,
man.
Trickus and Whitaker was on there, which is good.
That was a good one. That was a good one. I mean, it's certainly – I mean, I think the fight – International Fight Week used to be that one that it just wanted to hang its hat on, like, this was the biggest event of the year.
Yeah.
And I think they could definitely, you know, if Conor on it certainly helps to do that sort of thing, and it's definitely something that brings people to, you know, to town. But I just think that they're still iffy. I mean, like, the guy's been out for so long and all its other stuff. I just wonder if they don't think that Conor might flake on him. You know, that's a lot. That's a lot to build a huge card around a guy that you're not 100% sure how committed he really is to make it happen.
It's true.
You know, the fact that Conor was like, "Oh, I wanted to fight back in April. I wanted to fight back in December." Like, bro, already just assumed like exemptions already written, dog. Like, I'm ready to fight. How dare you, UFC, make me wait?
Yeah.
Not give me what I wanted. It's like, dude.
That's what's a little bit frustrating about this story. The underwritten story behind it is that a lot of people think that, like, the UFC made this change in USADA so they could make an exception for Conor when it's really quite the opposite. They were always going to make Conor do 6 months.
Which is, if anything, I mean, makes you respect the decision much more so. Like, I think I'm pretty sure I was even one of the ones that was like, dude, of course they're going to get an exception. They're going to bend over backwards. So the fact that they're like, no, we're going to stick our guns. I'm like, dude, here, let me take my hat off.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's awesome.
They deserve that recognition.
I think it's
absolutely
incredible.
Say what you mean about the new program, and we still got to see it, right? I mean, we really haven't seen anything of it yet.
There's still questions there. I mean, like, you know, this independent guy that's paid by the organization, you know? I mean, it's just one thing when your biggest thing that you want to kind of say every time you want to introduce a guy, you want to come out and just say, trust his principles. I'm like, bro, I've heard that.
Yeah.
Why do you keep feeling like you have to throw that down my throat? And it's like, oh, okay, because this is the guy that at the end of the day has to answer to a boss, has to answer to a corporation. You know, are you going to be the guy that wants to shut down a major fight? You know, like, this is me speculating, but it's like, bro, he would never do that.
And then what happens?
He would never do that.
And then what happens when that guy retires or that guy goes somewhere else, or you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we found this other guy who also has
Trust his credentials.
He was also in the room with Saddam Hussein. He was this guy was the guy that was holding the camera during Saddam Hussein.
When the SEAL team took down Osama bin Laden, this guy was in the back of the copter making sure everything was good
to
go.
He was the one that radioed back home, sir, we got him.
We got him. It's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of questions. I mean, in fact, funny you could bring that, because I was trying to read through some of the stuff, and I had read something sort of wrong, or at least I was just reading it with a person that was in the program as opposed to a new participant in the program. You know, where it said, like, hey, if you give the information of use to the administrator before you're actually pinged in the program, the administrator has the leeway to say that it's okay because you made them aware. And so I was reading that initially as, oh, hey, I haven't been caught yet, but let me just make sure I tell this administrator, hey, by the way, I've been taking this stuff. And then when I get popped,
I told you, bro. Nah.
And then Damon Martin chimed in, was like, no, bro, that's for like the new guys. I was like, okay, well, that makes a lot more sense, because I was like, that's a giant loophole in my opinion of what they could do to work the system around and just say, well, clearly I knew I was taking steroids. I let the administrator know. You guys hadn't caught me yet. Now you caught me, so just, hey, good. No, I got a free pass.
That's for new people coming in, and they might say, hey, look, you still have to come off of it for a certain amount of time, but we're not going to suspend you for 2 years. We're going to suspend you for 6 months because you weren't previously, you know, especially if it's something that wasn't illegal under certain other programs. Yeah. But, yeah, look, there's still a lot. I mean, it's a story that's going to be worth following this year for sure. All right, listen, one other guy who still has a lot of question marks surrounding his next move. Although, if I'm being honest with you, I don't think there should be. And I guess I'm laying out my biases right there first, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. It's Bilal Muhammad, who was still waiting to get his title shot lined up. It has not been yet, but I had a chance to speak with him literally just before I jumped in the car and headed over here. And here's what Bully B had to say. It is Bully B, Bilal Muhammad, the number 2 ranked UFC welterweight contender. And we assume the guy that's getting a title shot very soon, Bilal Muhammad. Give us the up-to-the-minute update right now. What is the progress on getting this thing booked and getting this fight planned?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there needs to be an assumption. I think I'm next. I think we're just waiting for Leon and his team to stop looking for I think they're looking, talking about Chuck Liddell deserves it ahead of me, or Tito Ortiz. Like, him and his coaches are trying to figure out a way to avoid me, but, you know, Uncle Dana knows who's next. Uncle Dana is going to make him do it, and just hope for a contract soon.
I love it. Yeah, I was going to ask you, right? UFC 296 is a couple weeks ago, right? You weigh in as the backup, of course. Leon Edwards wins the fight. We know how that fight played out. Now, afterwards, press conference, like always, I asked Dana, you know, hey, Bilal's next, right? And he was kind of like, well, I don't know. We'll figure it out. And then I asked Leon, and I'm like, well, Bilal's next, right? And he's like, well, I don't know. Maybe. I'm sure you saw that. So, what did you think? I mean, I guess on the one hand, I understand it's business and maybe you're leaving options open or what have you, but just being honest, and I'm not trying to be biased here, I don't see an argument that anybody else is next in line right now other than you.
Yeah, there's definitely nobody that should be ahead of me. I think for Dana, it was more so he was probably annoyed by how terrible that main event was. It was trash. Like, you know, they hyped it up. They act like there was something going to happen after the press conference. And for both guys, it was an awful fight. Neither one did much, and I'm pretty sure Dana was just like, dang, Trump came, everybody came, and they were excited, and we just had a dud. For Leon, he's definitely afraid. Like, Leon doesn't want to fight me. He's been avoiding me for 3 years now since that fight. Now you got his coaches coming out talking about Gilbert Burns deserves him more, and it's hilarious because these guys, I literally think their team's full of airheads, and now I'm starting to realize that they are afraid. They don't want this fight. They don't want this matchup. When they're calling for guys that I just beat, it just shows you that you're not even like a real coach anymore. It's like when you're the best in the world, you want to fight the next best guy in the world. You want to prove yourself to these guys. But when you have your own team and your own coaches obviously not believing in you and asking for somebody else that you just beat, they don't trust in you, they don't believe in your skills, and they know that when we do fight, I'm going to beat them.
Does it start to get personal for you at all? I mean, I know, like, this has been a long journey, right? And you've had to take over a lot of hurdles, and there's been stops and starts along the way, and you just keep getting wins. You just keep putting your name out there. It feels like, to me, like you've done everything you can to get it. Does it start to get personal that, or do you feel like maybe there's some kind of, like, head game going on or something?
No, it's definitely personal. Like now I'm starting to truly dislike them because you're going to sit there and you're going to try to bring down my resume. You're going to say this guy doesn't deserve it. He's not going to skip the line anymore. I'm on a 10-fight winning streak. You're not going to tell people and push the narrative that I don't deserve it because I earned this. I bled, sweat, freaking grinded my way to where I am, and I've beaten the best guys in the world. Every single guy they put in front of me, I've been an underdog, and I've dominated every single one of them. And I've had to take a longer, harder route than you. You made it to where you are by fighting lightweights and Nate Diaz and all these guys that weren't at the top. I'm fighting guys that were on winning streak, guys that fought for the title twice, guys that were the best in the world, guys that they would beat me that would have for sure got a title shot right away. So you're not downplaying what I've done. And when I do see him, it's pissing me off, and especially since they are the type that, you know, they were crying for their way to get up there. Leon took 2 years off from fighting to get there. But like I said, it only tells me what I already knew, that these guys are afraid of the fight. They're afraid of the matchup. I'm sure his coach is not going to figure out a way to beat me. His coach is more of a motivational speaker anyway. He's going to keep trying to figure out new ways to, hey, don't let him bully you, son. He's going to have to think of new motivational speeches for him because there's not going to be anything stylistic skill-wise that he's going to beat me with.
Well, I like it. We're starting to get a little spice in this matchup as well. I mean, it just makes sense. As you said, you've earned your way there. There is the history between you two as well, which feels like unfinished business. So it just seems like all the storylines and everything are already built in for this fight. I just don't see another direction you'd go. So I know that he was mentioning that UFC 300 might be a possibility. Is April doable for you? I know, you know, Ramadan is coming up and all that. I mean, I know you've trained through it before. Can you train through it for a title fight? Is April doable for you?
It's definitely doable. Like I said, for me, it's, I know I'm the best in the world, and I know that nothing was ever given to me easy. So even if it's a part of my story to have to do this through Ramadan. And like I said, if it'll get these guys to take the fight, yeah, I'll fast as I'm fighting you. What else do you want? What else do you need? Like, bro, I'll starve myself. Don't worry. I'll give you a heads up. So you have a little bit of an advantage, but regardless, anything that happens, I could go in there, starve for freaking a year, and I'm still going to dominate him. There's nothing that he's going to do that day that's going to beat me. And I think that they see it, the world sees it, and there is nothing else. There doesn't need to be a fake selling point of me having to talk trash or say stupid stuff. It's like, I'm on a 10-fight winning streak. You're on a 12-fight winning streak. We're the two highest winning streaks in the division. We have unfinished business. We have this. We have that. I'm number two in the world. I beat more ranked fighters than you beat ranked fighters. So these are all selling points, easy selling points. And I think that it sells itself.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we all like grudge matches. We all like, you know, some battles back and forth. But sometimes you just have the two best guys in the division that just need to be fighting right now because they both earned their way to the spot. And I just hope the sport never goes away from that, right? Like, I get it. We're trying to sell pay-per-views. We're trying to have fun. We're trying to do all these things that people latch onto. But sometimes you just got to reward people for putting together 10-fight winning streaks.
Exactly. Or you could have them say the dumbest stuff on the mic and then go out there and barely throw a punch, and both guys throw less than 100 strikes in a 5-round fight with Leon and Kobe. Like, Kobe wants to wear a costume, look like a clown, and Leon wants to, like, say, I'm going to kill this guy, and then low kick him the rest of the fight or shoot on him or just dumb stuff. But I'm going to be in his face. I'm going to be bullying him the whole 5 rounds, and I'm going to break him inside that cage. There's not going to be a dud at all if I do get my shot.
I love it. I was going to say, I don't even see why it should be an F. Well, I guess last thing I got for you, but what do you do right now, right? I mean, you know that this, you know, should be on the horizon. No promises yet, no contracts yet, I guess. So what do you do? Are you resting? Are you training? Are you trying to be careful you don't, you know, overtrain ahead of time? Like, how do you go about this? Is there a schedule that you got to know? Like, hey, I need a day because I need X amount of weeks to train for this.
I mean, I'm staying in the gym no matter what. My boy Charlie Radke's fighting in February. So Buffalo Chuck, we got him. So that's keeping me motivated is watching his tape, watching his opponent. I don't want to, like you said, I don't want to burn myself out by just focusing straight on Leon and just thinking about him the whole time. So it's like, I'm helping him. We got my next goal right now is to help him win this fight, get this fight going. I'm going to be in his corner. So that gets my mind off of everything else. And I'm just staying in shape no matter what.
I love it. Well, listen, well, appreciate the time as always. I'll let you get back to it. And we'll just stay tuned. Hopefully you get this news sooner rather than later.
I appreciate you, brother. Yeah, for sure.
All right, so Bilal Muhammad clearly believes that he should be next in line for Leon Edwards, but clearly starting to get a little bit annoyed at how long it's taking to get it done. Like I said, I mean, I kind of laid my cards on the table before we played the interview, and obviously I continued with it there. But I don't know. Am I missing something here, Cold Coffee? Am I missing a reason why there's another fight to make? Well, especially if we know Conor McGregor is going to 85. Now, yeah. If Conor McGregor was sitting at 70, maybe we got something. But if we know Conor McGregor is going to 85, like, is there anything on the table that I'm missing as to why there should be another fight first?
It's got to be. I mean, like, it would be silly for them to – I mean, the other contender, you got, like, Shavkat there. You got, like
– But he's hurt. We know he's hurt.
True.
And I don't even think he should have the argument, but I get why
right.
He might.
A lot of people still keep bringing his name up. And I heard somebody the other day was like, well, what about Sean Brady? I'm like, bro, like, it's not even close.
Yeah.
It's not even close. Like, don't make Bilal have to fight a guy that's trying to get there, you know, that's made some waves. It's hard to justify anybody else. It has to be. If it isn't, it's just shenanigans. It really is shenanigans.
I don't get it. I just, like I said, and normally I don't really – I mean, he beat Gilbert Burns. He beat Sean Brady. He
beat Gilbert Burns impressively.
Yes!
Like, that was ridiculous, dude.
How can you – and Burns and Brady are two of the names that come up. I get it. Shavkat, I do get Shavkat. I do get it. The undefeated record, all the – you know, everyone a finish – you know, got a little buzz around him. You know, so I get it. I don't agree with it, but I get it. But he's hurt. We know he has to be out for a little while.
I forgot he had that ankle injury.
Yeah, so I mean, that to me, that takes him out of the equation. And so I just don't see. So hopefully we get some news.
He's still dangerous with that ankle injury.
I know, right? Yeah, right? He's like, no, I'm hurt, but I'll fight. He's like, oh, just for a title? Yeah, I'll fight. I'm good.
I don't need a takedown.
I'll get it fixed early, afterwards. No big deal. All right, listen, I know you got to get to a big from Frosty Beverages to workout. I see a hot tea has made his way into the gym. He's
the dojo.
He's sitting there waiting. He's getting his hands wrapped. He's like, what's going on here? I know your membership is here.
Hi, hot tea. Hello, everyone.
You thought I was joking. He's really here. He's ready to work out. You guys put in some work in the gym over there, so I can respect
it.
We're serious.
You
go straight.
That's why
the
I kept the house
beverages.
Cold. So that, you know, you go in the gym, you work out, you come back here, it's like a nice bath.
Oh, that's it, bro.
He was complaining it was too cold when he first got in. He's like, what the hell's going on here?
I just saw in Dana White's Instagram stories, he's like in Bali or whatever and was getting a cold plunge installed at his hotel so that he could have a cold plunge. It's kind of the same thing, except you just don't turn your AC on.
Yeah, Dana says he's the cold plunge addict. I think he's way behind you on that. You've been cold for decades.
So true, man. He's
catch
like,
up,
bro,
Dana.
I've been
catch
cold
up,
plunging at 60 degrees in the AC all these times. So, all right, listen, last weekend without a USC event before we start getting it hot and heavy in the 2024 schedule. Of course, that's when we'll resume the and a half episodes. I will say if you're looking for some combat sports to watch this weekend, we are resuming CFFC Match Day on Sunday. It is Columbia University versus West Virginia. It is at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino Atlantic City. So it's the same place that we always do the CFFC MMA events. And it is the old Trump Taj Mahal. So it's the place that had the history of the old original
the old boxing
SEG events. And, yes, the boxing events as well. So CFFC Match Day this weekend on Sunday if you want to check out some Division I college wrestling. It's fun. I'm just telling you, if you haven't checked it out, check it out. It has made me a fan being a part of it. Like I said, I'm not on camera for this. I work in the production truck, but I'm enjoying it. And it's actually made me a much bigger fan of college wrestling. So look forward to checking it out.
You just like the singlets?
The singlets are strong.
I called it the right thing, right?
You did call it the right thing.
Not onesies.
Missouri, a couple weeks ago, they all had like jerseys on, and then like they had like their name down the back of the jersey. It was cool. So like, I think some programs are trying. Because I mean, you get it. Like, there's a lot of people that just don't want to wear a singlet because they don't like the way it looks. There's some programs that are starting to kind of like modernize it. It's almost like basically like wearing a rash guard, basically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think some of the program, I think some programs like the tradition, and I think some like to kind of modernize it so maybe it looks a little bit different. You know what I mean? But dude, the athletes there are amazing.
I'm sure it's functional as well. You know, less material to actually grab when when you're in a sport where that little bit of friction makes a big difference. If somebody 100%. Has something to grab onto, you know, it's just it's not the most updated look.
Ergonomically impressive. No, I
maybe for some it might be very, very impressive.
It's
I would not look good in a single.
the poor big guys in the heavyweight division, right? Yeah. You're like, come on, can we get them something else?
Just belly and ass just coming out of every angle. It would not be good.
Well, it's worth checking out, even with that in mind. It's fun to check it out. So give it a shot. CFSC match day. We've already actually committed, I believe. I don't know if the contract's done, but I know there's a verbal commitment in place for season two, and I think it's going to be even bigger next year. So it's been a fun inaugural. Cool. So I have two more events left, this and one more in February, but next season will be even bigger. So anyway, that's where we got to, and then we'll get back to MMA, and I'll be in Belgium next week, so we'll have to figure all that out. But you know we will. We never miss.
Yeah, we gotta figure out the Josh's Busch Lights.
Can we get some Busch Light over in Belgium? Probably not.
Probably not.
Maybe. But you know,
I was gonna go the Royal. Like I was gonna say, I'm sure you can find some Busch over there. But
light, dark, anything. Light. All right, you can tell this thing's got off the rails. Appreciate all the time. Hope everybody enjoys the holidays, and thanks for listening.